is Roanoke City a safe place?
Well, people dwell on the case study. You know, human beings see crisis, respond to crisis. It's a tragedy, but you got to put it in perspective. We just finished a year, a city of 100,000 people, where we had two confirmed murders, and we had an unfortunate, horrible, tragic incident. But here's the thing. If you're not hanging out at an illegal nip joint at 4 o'clock in the morning, that's a decision you have to make on your own. But if you're not doing that, then you probably don't have to worry about being the victim of a murder in the city. And that's the perspective you've got to put it in.
Will you make sure that nip joint stays closed in the future?
Here's the problem. Nip joints are nip joints by just that. They pop up where it's convenient, where they find a spot, whatever. If I take officers and designate, well, where's the places this could pop up, I'd spend all day long saying, well, here's five here, here's four there. We respond when we find out. If we can shut it down, the problem is it's not illegal to have a private party. And so it's skirting the law. You know, we know what went on. Can we prove that it's that? A lot of people don't want to talk to us. Well, did you pay a cover? Because I need to prove that there's some reason that it would be illegal. You know, it's just difficult. And that in itself is a frustrating situation. And so what I expect the officers to do is when they come across things like that, do what they need to do. But if there's nothing overtly illegal about it, you know, we're not going to crash parties just to, you know, to break them down, because people have a right to have a good time.
A lot of this, what's happened is, I guess, concentrated in Zone 4 of the city. Are you going to put more officers there? And are you worried about sort of roiling the community about extra police presence?
Well, here's the thing. We have been data-driven for years. Last year, I reorganized to facilitate more of that data-driven work. So if the incidents say we need to be there. Now, here's the thing. We've already placed officers in different areas of the city. Zone 2 has high shoplifting. In fact, people want to talk about, they use shoplifting as an indicator. Do you know that most of the shoplifters in the city come from outside the city? So I'm stuck with 1,000 crimes. In 2013, 1,100. In 2014, about 1,000. People who come into the city or live in the city and they steal. Well, I put officers there too. So here's the point about Zone 4. Zone 4, there were 37 total incidents in the city last year where someone was shot. 27 of those occurred in Zone 4. So the answer is yes, but I've already had people there. Remember, DMI, we saturated that area. But in this climate where people believe that we are policing based on race, that is absolutely false. Our police officers police based on the data, and they are there. And so if people in minority neighborhoods feel that the police are doing more in their neighborhoods because of whatever they believe, then the fact is it's because of those incidents that I just described. So if shopliftings is what we want to try to break down, then I'm going to have officers there. Did you see all the officers at Valley View Mall is what I would ask a citizen. There were tons of them there.
Is that Zone 2?
That's Zone 2.
Okay.
If you go to Zone 3, DMI, you should have seen the number of officers there. If we had a car larceny series, go to, you know, Zone 1, you'll find. That's what we do. We move where we are, and we do the best we can with a finite force that, quite frankly, is strained to pull off not only the community engagement, but the proactive engagement based on what the data is telling us where to be and how to do it. And I'm going to tell you, they're doing a bang-up job. They are absolutely wearing themselves out doing both. You know, there's not many police departments in this country that require their officers to go to community meetings 1 minute and then respond to significant incidents the next, or be predictive in where they need to be next. You know, I've got police officers that have to have analytical or statistical degrees to understand, well, maybe I should be here at 4 o'clock and here there, because that's what we're expecting of them. And then they got to turn around and be a social worker, or they got to turn around and understand, you know, some civil law, which we have very few civil authorities in. But that's kind of what it is. And so people need to understand, if you don't like your world, look at yourself first and start making some changes. That's what police do. That's why I spent the first 2 years of my tenure building huge, valuable relationships in the community. Out of those relationships come a certain expectation. And so while I will focus on those relationships continuously, now I've got to focus on meeting the expectations built out of those relationships in the reorganization of the department. And that means putting officers and employees in the right place with the right training to do the right things. And those are the expectations that now people have of us. And I got to tell you, they're bearing fruit. You know, when you have the crime that we had in our history of this city, and you come in with two confirmed murders, that's super. Now, what this year will hold, I can't tell you, because there's about 150 factors that go into why somebody does something bad. But I can tell you, we're making our impact. Now we need the community to step up. Community has to say enough is enough. And, you know, and that means people have to do their civic duty. They've got to understand that if they're tired of what's going on, don't blame somebody. Start with yourself. And that sometimes means picking up the phone and saying, hey, this is what I know. Doesn't make you a bad person. In fact, it makes you a good person.
Well, didn't that happen, in fact, at the NIP joint, that some people weren't as forthcoming as you would have liked?
Yeah, exactly. And we need them to come step up. You know, people talk about how it's honorable to not snitch. You know what's more honorable? You know what's more important? Doing the right thing, because somebody didn't deserve to die that night. No matter what they were doing, even if they made poor decisions, they didn't deserve to die. Do the right thing. You want to talk about honor? That's where you get it. You know, make a change in your life and the people around you. That's where to start. And that's the frustrating part of it. Because I can pluck out the area where we can tell you where this is expected to happen. Historically, today, tomorrow, next week. Next year, you and I will sit and talk about these case studies that pop up that put everybody on edge. And then everybody just kind of piles on. Citizens, these neighborhoods that are, you know, hard, good, hardworking people don't deserve these individuals that are creating this problem.
Just to wrap up, can you say Roanoke is a safe city?
You know, let me tell you this. Here's what people have to put in perspective. A man can walk into a school and kill children. A person can drop a bomb and blow up spectators. The Secret Service puts hundreds of man hours into protecting the president, and yet sometimes the President of the United States has been assassinated. I can't guarantee safety, but what I can guarantee is if people start being more cognizant of the decisions they're making and start paying attention to what's doing, it can become safer. That's what I can guarantee.